All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Blair Nickel with FranNet in Pacific Northwest in Southern California. All of you should be looking at a PFA for a, I know who it is. It's a gentleman, but it should say date of birth, December 22nd, 1960, with the wonderful previous position of Director of Fraud Operations. So hopefully everybody has that. Excuse me. Personal franchise assessment in front of them. So what I'm going to do is just kind of walk you through how I go through these assessments. You know, I've been in FranNet now for about, I think about 18 years now, so I can usually go through these assessments with pretty quickly. And the way that I do them is kind of an old school way that I learned from the founder of FranNet, Howard Baffett, literally 18 years ago. And the way Howie taught me how to look at assessment, he said, Blair, you should be able to kind of get a pretty good idea about this person within about 2 minutes. And there's really three basic things that we want to look at right off the bat. So I'm going to keep these lines open. I'm going to make this a little bit interactive. So can anybody tell me, when you get an assessment, what's the first thing that you look at? I know what I look at. I look at money, okay? I want to see what, how much money does this person have. So I go to, what is that, the fourth page, fifth page, to look at the kind of first and foremost the person's net worth. So if I look at this net worth, it's just under $2 million for this individual. So I say, okay, this person's got a fairly good net worth, and then I want to see, okay, do they have liquid cash? And then I look at this person, yeah, they got about, what, about a half a million in liquid cash. So really no issues financially with this individual. Now, if I look at the net worth as low, that's going to bring me to my second question. But before I go to that second question, the other thing I look at is I look at the retirement funds, so 401k, RSSP. This person has just under $1 million for that. The reason why I look at that is probably – at least half of our clients or my group's clients use some portion of their retirement funds, even if they have the liquid cash just to write the check for the business, they'll use some portion of their retirement funds. I think they just like the tax benefits of it. They like the ease of it, and they like to keep some liquid cash available. But if the person doesn't have liquid cash, then I'm going to look at their retirement accounts to see, hey, is there money to borrow from there? Overall, what I'm looking for is, does somebody have somewhere between $50,000 to $100,000 plus of accessible funds to put into this business? If I see that, great. We go on to question two. If I see that it's a low number, $50,000 number, I'm going to go to question number two and pay attention to it very, very closely. So does anybody know kind of what the second thing is that we should look at after money?
Sales.
That's right. That was Leslie, right?
Yep.
All right. So that's correct, Leslie. So then we look at sales. The reason why we look at sales as question number two after money is if somebody doesn't have a lot of liquid cash, but they have the ability to do sales, then we're still okay. We can still work with that person. They can still look at, you know, some of your B2B service-oriented low-cost businesses, maybe your B2C low-cost businesses that do require sales. For this person, he has the money, so, you know, he can look at businesses that require a little bit more capital, which tend to be more storefront opportunities, things like that. And, you know, by chance, this guy ranks his sales ability as kind of right in the middle, kind of a, you know, six or a seven. So overall, yeah, hey, I can still work with this guy. So really for this guy, question number two isn't really as apparent as it would be for somebody who has less money. The third thing that I look at now is right below sales, and that's commitment to being in business in the next 6 months. I'm looking for maybe a seven, but what I really want to see is an eight, nine, or a ten. So I want to see, hey, Is this person really committed to doing this? Well, this guy puts a 10, so that's pretty strong. And then the next thing I look at is what I call the buyer attributes, okay? So if you go to values and motives, which I think is about page number seven into this, This person is ranked as an emulator achiever, primarily emulator. So if you had, I know a lot of you are fairly new to FranEd that are on the call right now, but if you had somebody who was primarily emulator, what would you think about this person? What can you tell me about that person?
Image conscious.
Okay. What else? Anything else? Okay, typically your emulators, yes, they're going to be image conscious. They're usually fairly quick decision makers. They're also my type of a client that they're hard to keep on track because they're going to kind of do things their own way. What I've also noticed about emulators and coaching some friend and associates is that if you happen to attack them in the wrong way, or not attack them, but if you happen to question them and what they are doing, they will basically tell you to kiss off and they'll go do something else on their own. So it's very hard to challenge them. So you got to kind of be very diligent in controlling them, because if you don't control them, they're going to go get answers on their own. They're going to self-ambush themselves. Because they think they're, you know, the greatest gift to mankind, each of them individually. So you got to keep them on track, okay? But I like emulators. I used to be an emulator when I was much younger. I'm more an achiever now, maybe even more achiever, slightly conscious these days. But once I see emulator, then I look at the secondary attribute, which in this case is achiever, and I love achievers. They're go-getters. They're goal-oriented. They tend to be very, very good business people, okay? So, again, there's really three sections of this assessment that I look at right off the bat, and I can generally get a good feeling about this person within about a minute or two of looking at this assessment. So, again, I start off with money. Does the person have money? Secondly, I look at sales and commitment. So if the person doesn't have money, do they have the ability to do sales? If so, we're still okay. If the person doesn't have money and they're not comfortable with sales, either we probably shouldn't work with this person, so we'll disqualify them, and, you know, I'll have a call with them and just kind of politely kind of go over and a brief review of the assessment, kind of what I see, and maybe ask a few more questions. So, you know, maybe they didn't answer it correctly or what have you. But if they don't have money, they don't have sales skills, usually that's going to be a disqualification. I usually won't meet with the person. Then the third thing I'm going to look at is buyer attributes, because really with those three things, I should have with about 80% accuracy the types of businesses that this or franchise that this person should be looking at, okay, with really just those three questions. The rest of the 20% that I'm trying to find are little clues that I'm looking for within the assessment. So that's when I say, okay, I think I got a general idea of who this person is. Let me see if I can find some ideas, just some helpful hints about this person that I can learn from prior to going into the initial meeting with this person, okay? So keep in mind, by the time I have, once I receive the assessment, and I kind of do a brief overview, and everything looks good, I book the appointment, and usually my appointment, if it's an achiever or an emulator, I'm going to want my appointment to be pretty quick, within a few days of receiving the assessment, because they want to move quickly. You know, like me, if you know, I'm an achiever, and, you know, when I see a doctor, if I want professional services, I want to see you now, okay? I don't want to wait around a few days. If I don't get what I want now, I'm going to go find my answer somewhere else. Okay, so again, with my achiever emulators, I'm going to book my appointments pretty quickly. With my belongers, societally conscious, you know, it's kind of, you know, when my schedule dictates, because they're generally not in a hurry. Okay? So again, after those three things, I'm going to start from the beginning of the assessment. So, you know, I'll kind of start at the top. You know, how old is this person? Are they married? Do they have kids? You know, if I see that they're kind of on the younger side and they have kids, or, you know, are their kids maybe getting to those college years, so I got to, you know, take into account, you know, are they running into college expenses, which can be quite expensive. Does their spouse work? So is there additional income coming into the household? And how much money is this person used to earning? So this person was used to earning about $200,000 a year. So, you know, pretty good, but not anything outlandish. So if I see somebody who's making $500,000 or more a year, you know, that's pretty hard right off the bat. And so, you know, I got to have that conversation of, hey, what are your expectations for income? All right. And if I see that it's just unachievable within the first year or so, well, we're probably going to have trouble with this person. But $200,000 doesn't scare me. Then I go down to, have you ever owned your own business? So this one's no. If I see yes, it launches me into a couple questions I'm going to ask of the person, either in kind of my preliminary interviews as I'm booking the appointment or in the initial appointment. So if I see yes, they've owned their own business, I would say, hey, you know, can you tell me a little bit about that business? What did you like about that business? What did you not like about that business? Would you do that type of business again? And I'm jotting things down quickly as they're talking to me. That's starting to give me clues of things that they like or that they want to see in their business next time around. The next question, how long have you been looking for a business? What I'm really looking for there is, has this person been looking for a business for a long time? Okay. If the person's been looking for a business for a long time but hasn't made a decision, and what I mean by long time, I mean 4, 5, 6 months plus. I'm not scared by 1 to 3 months, but if I see 4, 5, 6 months plus, that means this person's been looking for something that they haven't found. And so that's my question to them. I say, you know, hey, so-and-so, I see you've been looking at businesses for about 4, 5, 6 months. What is it that you haven't seen that you want? And how many businesses have you looked at? Okay? Then I'll look at what businesses have you looked at. And what was really nice about this guy is that he's been looking at franchises. So right off the bat, I said, wow, this guy's pretty serious. And this guy's already been looking at franchises. In fact, some of the franchises that we work with, we were working with Sporkless, but we didn't work with any of these others, which were food related. But if I see that this person's already been doing due diligence on franchise, I know that they're a fairly serious buyer. So I get a pretty good shot with this person. What I'll also do with that question is I'll have them dissect each business. First, I'll have them kind of put them in ranking order, kind of, hey, of those franchises, were there any that kind of stood out more than others so I can learn more from the client? But then have them tell me kind of, hey, what did you like, what did you not like about each of these businesses? Okay, which kind of brings you to the next question is, hey, what attracted you to these businesses? So this person says, hey, with Sporkless, I like the business and take my son there. I like their business model. Okay, so I want to find out, well, what did he like about their business model? What did he not like about their business model? This guy's also been looking at food. As you know, traditionally, a lot of our clients come to us thinking, hey, that's all franchising is food, or maybe that's where they started their research. That traditionally, that's not where our clients purchase. So rarely do our clients purchase food. And then this guy also says, hey, really enjoys customers and employees. So I'm thinking, hey, this guy wants more of a customer-related type of transaction. He doesn't mind handling teams of employees. Now, that's what I think, but I'm going to ask them, okay? So I'm going to ask this guy, hey, you mentioned that you really enjoy customers and employees. Can you kind of tell me a little bit more about that? You know, how many employees were you used to running? What type of employees were you used to running? What is it about working with customers that you really enjoy? And then I'll look at how we know when you found the right business. And he says, due diligence, including discussions with current franchisees, comes back positive. So obviously he wants positive validation. He knows that the process to talk to franchisees, which is good. So this guy knows what's ahead of him. He also mentioned that he wants flexibility to devote time towards his family. So I'm putting a big underline under the word flexibility and time, okay? What I think that means is he wants a business that he can back away from, and I don't know if it's going to kids' soccer games and baseball games during the day, or he wants more of a part-time business or whatever the case may be, but, you know, probably something where he can dictate his own schedule. But I want to talk to him about that. I want to see, you know, why is it that he wants flexibility and time? What does that mean to him? And then he also mentioned he has the opportunity to expand as far as I want to take it. So he probably wants something scalable, can expand into multiple units, whatever the case may be. How much time can you devote? What I'm looking for right there is the person telling me, hey, they expect full time, they're a workaholic, or a big clue is if they say semi-absentee or, hey, I only want 20 hours a week. If I see that, then I know we're going to be looking at semi-absentee types of businesses. Now, I want to confirm it in the client meeting, but that's a huge clue on the types of franchise that you should be showing this person if they show, you know, kind of a part-time devotion towards this business. This guy says, hey, I can do this full-time, and, in fact, I, you know, expect a lot of hours in this business. Quite honestly, the rest of the assessment I don't really care about. With those handful of questions right there, I get a lot of what I need from this person, okay? You know, the to me, the greatest business achievement, you know, most of these guys that come out of corporate America, it's just gibberish to me. You know, so, you know, I might look at some things. You know, this guy says, I've implemented many projects that have resulted in $1 million-plus benefits, improved service. Okay, there's not much I can take away from that. However, I love the most was leading a team of employees over 5 years in Relay for Life. Okay, so that goes back to the, you know, working with teams of employees, so he must be good at it. We started with a small team of 12, and last year I had 430 employees on my team and raised $130,000 for Cancer Society. That year I was recognized at the event as the most inspirational volunteer. That was my greatest business achievement. What I see there maybe is that he has this sense of giving back to the community. He cares. Maybe it's more of a, he's a team leader. He likes, you know, encouraging and coaching and motivating teams of employees. Again, I don't pay too much attention to that. Now, please try the most important things to you in choosing a business that I will pay attention to. So passion, what the business product produces or delivers, and the ability to grow into multiple units if desired. Business is best in class and it offers a high quality product. So when I see best-in-class, high-quality product, that's usually an image thing. And again, this person is primarily emulator. So when I think emulator, I'm thinking kind of cutting-edge, new, different, something that has a twist compared to everybody else out there. So what I'm starting to put together in my head is, okay, we have an emulator achiever on us who's got money, so this person probably wants something that's a little bit more imagey, something that has employees associated with it, teams of employees, so something that doesn't require a tremendous amount of sales, and he kind of ranked himself right in the middle. So I'm starting to think, okay, kind of new, different, maybe storefront types of businesses that have teams of employees associated with it. That's kind of the direction that I'm starting to think of. Does anybody on the phone kind of not start to think that or not see that? No? Okay. Area preferred, what I look for there is, you know, do they want to do this in some other part of the country or something like that? This person was right in our backyard here in the Pacific Northwest. Professional affiliations and hobbies, the only thing I look for there is, you know, kind of icebreaker conversations. You know, is there anything that this person does that, I do too? Obviously, this person was referred to us by Lee Heck. Okay, let's pause there for a second. Questions thus far?
I have a question from Sarah Brown. She just joined Stacy Swift, and she was unable to join the call. But her big question was, after reading the PFA, if you addressed it at all, the wild cards in his hierarchy of values, any probing of the pain, sandlerizing around those, did you do any of that?
Well, the way that I probe the pain is really in the initial meeting. And my first question to all of my clients, and in fact, it's one of the first questions I bring up in the seminars and workshops as well, is why are you here? Why are you doing this? And a lot of times I hear, you know, I'm going through a career transition, or this is something I've always wanted to do, or I'm just tired of corporate America, whatever the case may be. So I'm starting to identify the pain. And I'll say, okay, so, you know, you're kind of tired of corporate America, and, you've gone through this transition a little bit. How has that affected you? Okay, so I'm starting to kind of peel back the layers a little bit. I'm not as harsh on getting somebody the true pain as I used to be. I have found here in the Pacific Northwest that I can't be. They just shy away from it. Down in Southern California or other parts of the country where I've worked with clients, you can dig into them pretty hard. But again, the way I find out pain is, why are you here? That's my first question. Then I'll ask a couple questions after that. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, so you don't really consider the wild cards at all? You just kind of...
Again, it's, I think the rest of the franchise assessment is helpful, but if you, I'm one of those guys that really belongs to the, you know, keep it simple, stupid, the KISS system. And if you just stick to those three things, just remember three things, buyer or money, sales and commitment, and buyer attributes. And I think Leslie would agree with me, and you know, she's been doing this for a long time too. If you understand those three things cold, you should have about an 80 to 90, call it at least an 80% accuracy of the types of businesses this person should be looking at. But Leslie, would you tend to agree? Leslie?
Sorry, I was on mute. Whoops, you there? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Sorry about that. No, I would agree, but it also requires knowing the inventory.
Correct. So now, that's a whole nother workshop.
Right. Right. That's not today, but yes, if you know the inventory, it's just fine-tuning, as Blair says, if you've got those three things, if you look at them first and understand them, and they're correct.
Okay. So as you go in, a lot of the stuff can make this business very confusing. If after a few years in this business, then I pay more attention to some of the stuff that's in the assessment than in the beginning. Just pay attention to those three things, and those three things will get you a long way into really knowing who this person is. And then, like Leslie said, yeah, you got to know the inventory, because if you know the inventory well, then you logically should know the types of businesses. But all I'm looking for now in this assessment is just little things that might help me, and because what I've created prior to sitting down with this client is basically a long list of franchises. When I say long list, it might be four or five, it might be 10 or a dozen. But basically what I'm trying to do is get that long list down to about three. Okay, what are the three businesses that I think that I'm going to end up showing this person towards the end of the initial meeting? Okay, now once in a blue moon, what I think the direction is that we're heading in ends up being something totally different once I actually sit down in the client meeting. Now, sometimes I like that because it kind of challenges me, and I got to think, you know, very quickly on my feet. But overall, I'm fairly accurate with that long list. Okay. All right. Going on to the next page. Again, tell me about a work situation where you were happiest. I don't really pay much attention to that. What do you like least about your past job or businesses? I don't pay much attention to that. What things do you want to avoid in considering business? Okay, that I will pay a little bit of attention to. And this guy says heavy sales required by me. But again, he already answered that by the second of the three things that we look at right off the bat. He already told us that he doesn't want a whole lot of sales. Okay, but sometimes I'll see something else there. Again, I just want to confirm kind of his sales ability. So again, he says kind of medium range. So I'll look at those three questions below, which digs into the types of sales. You know, are they good at networking? Are they good at kind of pounding on doors and stuff? This guy says no, and I expect him to say no. Does he want to create awareness out in the community? He says yes, but my guess is he's more like the last one, which is my retail location will drive in customers. And he said yes to that. Would you enjoy a business where you consult, sell, or market a product or service? He's already answered that by the questions above. So, again, I don't pay much attention to that. Is he interested in multiple units? He says yes, but, again, he already answered that in some of the previous questions. He says he started off as owner-operator, but then he wants to be absentee. So he wants a business that is designed that he can back away from. Will a spouse or family member be actively involved? He says yes, but his wife, remember, works, okay? Now, along the way, his wife was involved in just about every single follow-up call that I had with them, which was very good to see. He kept her very much involved in the research process. but she works full time, and she would call in from her job. So I really didn't expect her to be too involved in the business. My ideal business would look something like, again, I don't pay a tremendous amount of attention to all this, because again, based on those three questions, I should already know the answers to these questions. So I don't pay much attention to that. So after all of that, yeah, I'll do a quick glance of some of the other stuff in the back portion of the assessment. Some of the things I will take a look at is I will go to, the hierarchy of values, which is, what page is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's the 8th page in. So it's under values and motives. I'll look at hierarchy of values. Again, I don't pay a tremendous amount of attention to this portion, but what this tells me is, you know, what we call, which is an old school term within Framnet, is what we call the lost sheep. Well, the lost sheep are these red italicized words. So this person's satisfaction, effectiveness, and dependability. Now, the questions I use there are how I stylize these questions in the interview. Again, this is, I almost use these questions if I'm looking for just more questions to ask, because I'm running out of questions. But, you know, I'll ask the client if I want to, hey, you know, I see that, you know, one of the things that this assessment told me is that what are the values that are really important to you? And it said, hey, the values that are really important to you, John, is that success, satisfaction, flexibility, control, effectiveness, and dependability are very important to you. However, one of the other things this assessment tells me is that that value may be important to you, but for whatever reason, you're not receiving it. You're not getting it somehow. Can you tell me a little bit about that? As you can see, it tells me that, hey, satisfaction is very important to you, but for whatever reason, you're just not getting it. Now, we're starting to dig into a little bit of the pain elements here, but, you know, it helps me understand the clients a little bit better. But again, it's not going to really tell me or dramatically have me change the style or types of franchise that I'm going to show this person. If anything, this section of the assessment will help you establish rapport with the client, because they'll go, wow, this assessment really got me. And yeah, that is something that I'm not getting right now. And, you know, let me share it with you. Okay? So that's kind of what I looked at for. The next page, the work style director. You know, again, this guy likes managing teams of employees, so I would imagine that he's going to be a good director. You know, because they generally need control, they need to achieve. So he's good at managing those people. They tend to be fast and decisive. If you look at the work style on the next page, it tells you exactly what a director is. So, again, this person's going to make fairly quick decisions. They're going to be very goal-oriented. We already knew that, again, from the third question we asked ourselves is, what's the buyer attributes of this person, which was emulator achiever. So an emulator achiever, I would expect to be more of a director or a promoter right off the bat. Okay, and sure enough, this guy's director. I will look at the meta programs and strategies, which is the second to last page. What I'll look for there, which again is just confirming what I thought I already knew about this person with their buyer attributes. Again, this guy was emulator achiever. So I would expect this person to be externally validated. Now, externally validated tends to come from emulators. It means that as they go out there and they do the research, they are going to be very influenced by outsiders and by others. So they're the type of person that may be talking to a friend at a cocktail party or something and saying, hey, I'm looking at this type of business, and that they'll be influenced by what their friend tells them. So if their friend tells them, you know what, you don't want to do that type of business, you know, I heard this can happen, that can change their mind on the types of business that they're looking at very quickly. So what I do use externally validated people, what I do in the appointment is I have the conversation about get the facts, be your own expert. You know, you might be at a cocktail party or working or talking to friends or loved ones, And they may influence your decision. But, you know, as you talk to them, they haven't done the same research that you're doing. So, you know, just kind of jot down what they're telling you, but go back to talking to the franchisees and see if what they told you is true or not. And I think what you'll find is a lot of times that that information may be false. I just don't want it to influence your decision at all, because I want you to become your own expert. So if I see external, I want to have that conversation. So what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to diffuse any landmines that may happen in the research process, okay? Because if it does happen, that way I can anchor back to John and say, hey, John, remember in our meeting I talked about getting the facts and getting the information up front and becoming your own expert? And you can say, yes. I'd say, okay, well, here you talk to somebody and they influence your decision. So watch out for external. The other portion will be internal. And if somebody's internally validated, you know, they're going to get the facts themselves. The next one, optional, I would expect that out of an emulator achiever. So optionals are, these are people, again, who probably want to look at more than two or three franchises. So rarely do I show somebody more than three franchises unless they are optional. So if somebody's optional, I might show them four or five franchises, but only have them choose three. Okay, so if they feel that they have choices. So your optionals, you want them to feel like they have choices and they're not being controlled or something like that. And they're also the type of person that will come back later in the process and say, hey, are there some more franchises that I could look at? Okay. Chunk size specific. So these guys are going to want small chunks of information along the way, but they are going to want specific information. Where I have a tough time personally with that, and this is where I need to adapt to the client, is I'm more visual. I'm more kind of global, kind of broad information in the beginning, and then I'll want my specific information later. This guy likes specific information up front. So I'm going to, when I show businesses to this person, or I talk about franchising to this person, since they are specific, I'm going to want to use more hard fact details with this person, okay? Communication style, this person was kinesthetic. So what kinesthetic is this person has the horrible attribute of caring. So they care about others. So, you know, you want to ask that, you know, hey, is it important to you to kind of give back to the community? You know, to feel like you're making a difference. So they'll tend to be gentle, what have you, emotional, warm, dependable. I would usually expect my belonger types or societally conscious clients to be more kinesthetic, but for whatever reason, the kinesthetic value came up. And then I'll look at the last step, and basically the last step should basically summarize, for the most part, the type of person that this is or the types of businesses that this person should be looking at. So for the most part, I think this is true, except for the sales, even high ticket, maybe even the B2B part. For the rest of it, you know, cutting edge, trendy, high visible, prestigious, dynamic and changing, potential for quick return, you know, yeah, that's generally who this person is. So, again, along the way as I'm going through this assessment, I'm taking all kinds of notes. I'm jotting down the types of questions I want to ask this person in the initial meeting. And it basically should be confirming everything that I saw with this assessment and really confirming what I saw within the three basic questions I asked of myself right in the beginning, which was money, sales and commitment, and buyer attributes. Okay? So we've gone through the assessment now. So any questions to this point?
Hey, Blair, it's Leslie. I do have a question, please.
Yes.
So kind of going back to getting into people's, you know, pain and wild cards, I mean, do you ever get any pushback with that, particularly around things, you know, some of those pains are not all work-related. I mean, when you see honesty in red up at the top, sometimes you wonder, is this about the person sitting next to me? I mean, does it ever get kind of sticky?
I haven't yet sticky. I've had people say, nah, you know what, that's really not a, you know, something that's missing for me. You know, if it's something like honesty, when I see that, it is, yeah, you know what? My previous employer wasn't honest with me. I felt deceived by them. Something like that. Or, you know, I had a business partner that kind of deceived me. So it depends. If somebody's more achiever-oriented, you know, to really dig in the pain with them, it really isn't going to make a difference because they're achievers. They're just going to go after things, as you know. Same with emulators. If somebody's more of a belonger, societally conscious, which is the total opposite of who I am, and so my belonger, societally conscious clients, I really got to establish good rapport with them, okay? I have a tough time working with belonger, societally conscious. One, because they're very slow, as you know. Two, I'm not who they are. And so I'm more like a Jack Armstrong who has very quick, decisive conversations. Okay, for those of you who know Jack, you know he gets right to the point right off the bat, and you better be right there with him, and if you're not, he's going on to the next thing. Okay, I'm not as quick as Jack, I'm kind of like that. But the longers, they just love to talk and talk and talk. And so sometimes if I bring in those values in, you know, lost sheep questions, wild card questions, I think it helps establish rapport with them a little bit better because they tend to open up their feelings. You know, they're the type of client that'll kind of give you the hug at the end of the interview and stuff, but not necessarily with achievers or emulators.
Okay, thank you.
This is Michael. I have a quick question. I know that I was told the answer to this, but I don't remember it. What part of the client assessment does the client have access to? What are they seeing that we deliver?
So that is the – what we see or what we use is the QSR.
Okay.
Okay, so when you get the file back in your email, there's generally about four different attachments. There's the QSR, which is the one that we use. There's the PFA, which is the copy that you should give to your client.
Okay. So just can you briefly say what's in the PFA versus what's left out of the PFA?
What's left out of the PFA is their financials. They'll have all the charts and graphs. They will not get the so if I was to take this QSR, basically what they will get, which starts with the client at a glance and goes all the way to the back of what you're looking at right now. So they generally won't get the first five pages.
Okay.
Yeah. So feel free to just pull up a PFA, and you'll see the difference between a PFA and a QSR.
Right.
The other thing that they will not receive is the risk index. Now, we didn't go over that today. I don't pay a tremendous amount of attention to it. Again, that's just me. But they don't get that.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, you are going off the QSR. What your client is sent to, what you email to your client prior to the meeting, and I also bring a colored copy to the meeting, is that personal franchise assessment for them. And then, of course, I bring the QSR with me. So what I hand to my clients in the meeting kind of right off the bat is I have those FranNet kind of portfolios. They get a copy of their personal franchise assessment. They get, obviously, my business card. They get the one sheet on the steps to opening a franchise. And then if they, for whatever reason, they didn't have a roadmap to success, I'll put a roadmap to success in there. A lot of times I'll just put an extra one in there anyways because I have hundreds of them. You know, maybe they'll give them to a spouse or a friend or something like that. And then I also have copies of articles. They're kind of old and dated, and I think we need to find some new ones, but I'll try to put some articles in that portfolio to them that I think kind of aligns with who this person is. So if I'm meeting with a female, I'll put kind of these women in franchising articles in there. If it's somebody who I think is going to be more towards like a master franchisee type of person, then I'll put some master franchising articles in there. Just, you know, so the person can look at it and say, yeah, you know, this person, you know, Blair from FranNet understands me and he got me. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, Blair, this is Richard Bach.
Question, going back to inventory and buyer motivation, when you're selecting franchises, how hard are you looking at the partner list as it's designating buyer motivation? Is that something you rely on, or you rely more on your gut and other criteria for selecting the concepts?
No, I rely on the list. So it'll, you know, what he's referring to is on the franchisor partner list, it'll say the franchisor, and then it'll say, hey, the most likely buyer attributes of this person. So I do look at that. However, I think as you, if you talk to probably the top five Franet offices, you know, you have the number two, number three office, and I think number four office, meaning Leslie and I on this call, and I think Leslie would agree with me that over 80% of your deals, if not 90% of your deals, will probably come from 10 franchisors or less. So I know those 10 franchisors cold. I also know that over half of our clients are purchasing semi-absentee franchises right now. So almost every single one of my clients will be shown at least one semi-absentee franchise, or I will suggest to them that they look at a semi-absentee franchise in addition to the other two or so franchises that they look at. But to answer your question, yes, no, I will pay attention to that. But again, I'll work with, you know, 10 or a dozen franchisors at any given point in time. I generally know those attributes of those franchisors right off the bat.
Okay. So you're looking at it, but you're not married to it.
I'm married to it. I'm married to it.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, there's some deals that I need to get to know. Like, you know, I see a ton of deal announcements right now from Dental Fix. I've yet to have shown it. I need to get to know that deal. So if I see, like, hey, you know, this guy might be a Dental Fix guy, is it an emulator achiever type of business? You know, I'd have to go look. So that's something that I'll go look on this list. And I guess it's on page two of this partner list, at least for me. Dental Fix is, it shows how long I've printed off this list, to be honest with you, Richard.
Dental Fix is an AE, so it might work.
Yeah, so it might work for this person. But, again, I think Dental Fix is more of a sales business, I think. Again, I don't know it well. So is this person a sales person? No. So I probably wouldn't show that to this person. So I'm thinking this person is more of a retail storefront, cutting edge style type of business. Now, are you guys kind of eager to know what this guy bought? No? Okay.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were asking. Yes, I would like to know what he bought.
This guy purchased 18.8. So if you think of 18.8, and he actually purchased a 7-pack of 18.8, so it was about $75,000 commission to me. If you think of 18.8, it is retail storefront. It doesn't require a lot of sales. It's cutting edge. It's new. It's different, which fit exactly what this guy was looking for. And if you look at his assessment, you go, yeah, I see all those things. Again, I was able to drive a lot out of him about sport clips and what he liked there and what he didn't like, which were huge clues to me. He was good at managing teams of employees. And if you think of the hair care industry as managing teams of employees, so it was a fit right down the line. And he was able to control kind of the Portland market because he was the first on the block to take it. So it was a perfect fit, and he was very, very happy with the choice.
Is he open yet, Blair?
No, this was 2 months ago. So I expect him to be open in about 6-7 months. Some of our 18.8 clients are now open in Southern California and doing really well. In fact, I expect to start seeing some royalty checks here shortly. So, all right, gang, so we're just about at the hour. Other questions that I can answer for you?
Blair, this is Frank. It might be off the beaten path here just a little bit, but so I guess this client, John, came your way through Lee Hecht Harrison, and presumably they sat through a workshop. Do you find, is there any difference at all in your experience in the way that clients relate to you, whether they attended a workshop or not?
Well, every single one of my clients, before I meet with them, has either attended a workshop or has watched my recorded workshop, which is a webinar. So I want my clients to come into the first meeting fully educated on FranNet, on me, on the process, on franchising, everything. So every single one of my clients has seen one or the two. Now, is there a difference between the clients that have gone to the webinar or the personal workshop? Yeah, every now and then. I catch somebody who didn't watch the webinar altogether, and I would expect that. You know, people pay probably more attention to a personal workshop compared to a webinar. So there might be a few things I have to go over in the meeting, but every single one of them attends one of those two. Now, this person was actually referred to me by a coach at Lehigh Harrison, so I had to get him the webinar, but it happened to coincide right around the timing of a Meet the Franchisor event, so he also went to a Meet Franchisor event, and then I met with him. So he kind of got two doses of education prior to me sitting down with him.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I highly suggest that of the new franchisors on the call that they must do one of those two things prior to you sitting down with them. If you don't, either your client meeting is going to be super long, and my average client meeting is only about an hour to an hour and a half. I don't have those 2 to 3 hour client meetings. Once a blue moon, I'll have a 2 hour one. Those tend to be more of my longer, slightly conscious clients, or somebody who just has a ton of questions. But my client meetings tend to be about an hour to an hour and a half. Okay. Other questions?
Sir, this is John. This is John Adams. I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday I was working with a couple, mm-hmm. and he was an emulator achiever, and she was a belonger achiever.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you adapt your process when you have a couple and they're different but similar?
Okay. Very good question. So when you get a couple that is going to start the business, That's a longer, tougher interview, types of businesses to show them. To me, it's kind of your hardest interview, if you will. If I have a couple come into the client meeting, one of the questions I ask them right off the bat is, who's going to start in the business? Okay? So whoever starts the business, let's say it's the wife, and I think you said the wife was belonger achiever, if I remember correctly.
Right.
I really got to pay attention to the wife. And I have that conversation with them. I say, look, if both of you are coming into the business, one of our suggestions is if one of you is employed, the one who is employed, stay employed while the other person gets the business up and running. At least you have income coming into the house right away. If I see that both are not employed or hey, one person is going to start the business and then the second spouse is going to get involved in the business later. Whoever the spouse is going to start the business first. We have to really nail. And what I tell them is I say, look, it's got to be a match for the first spouse because if it's not a match, then there may not be a business around for the second spouse to get involved in. That's kind of how I handle that one. Sometimes I get the clients to say, hey, we're both going into this together and we're going to start it together at the same time. That's hard. So you got to kind of try to mold both styles of businesses and look at both attributes, look at both skill sets, and that's your hardest, in my opinion, your hardest client interview.
you got to find
businesses that kind of match both styles.
My first pass resulted in virtually everything in the inventory as being a possibility
yeah.
for them.
It's hard. So sometimes what I might do there is I go, God, you know, what I'll tell them at the end, if they look like, God, you know, these guys can do anything and everything together, what I'll tell them is I'll say, look, there's good news and there's bad news based on our conversation here this morning. The good news is I think there's a lot of businesses that you guys can do and do really well at. The bad news is I think there's a lot of businesses you guys can look at, so it's tough for us to narrow down. And so what my suggestion is that we start off with three companies, and not that one of the three is going to be the one, but at least we're looking and we think we're looking at businesses that may fit both of you. But we take a pause in 2 weeks and kind of see, okay, we've been looking at these three businesses for a couple weeks. What do we like? What do we not like? And what have you guys learned about each other as you look at these businesses? Was there any business that you both looked at and said, nope, we can't do that together? And was there any businesses that you said, yep, we can do that together, and here's why? And so it's more of a learning. You're kind of almost extending the meeting into multiple conversations, but it gives you an excuse to tell them, hey, here's why we're going to just, you know, this first group of businesses may not be a match, but it gets us started, and we're heading down the road, but we need to learn more about each other. Does that help?
Yeah. They actually wound up choosing to look at three Achiever Emulator businesses.
Okay.
Two of them because they have a deep background in residential rental properties. So they came back and said, well, we can maybe go towards business rental properties, sort of. So they're looking at the two salon businesses that are more real estate than salon.
Oh, yeah, like Salons by JC and those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, those two.
Yep.
And one other one, which is a little different. So
okay.
They kind of wound up more on his side than hers, but he's the outgoing sales guy, and she's the stay-behind-the-scenes, do-the-accounting person. So.
Yeah. So that's usually when I end my client meeting, you know, I schedule my first follow-up call with the clients before they walk out of the room. That way they're on my calendar, and they will always stay on my calendar until the time that we kill them as a client or they buy or they elect not to buy. But I schedule that first client meeting, and I tell them, hey, and this is what I suggest you do, is that, hey, when we have that first call, let's dissect each of these three companies and see what we liked and what we didn't like. And, again, was there one spouse that said, hey, you know, I didn't like that, and here's why, and what have you. So it may shed some light on some other franchise that you should look at, but, again, that's your hardest type of client or client meeting to have. Because you're dealing with two totally different personalities and skill sets and everything. All right, any other questions, you guys? All right, then. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. Feel free to reach out to me at any time. And have a good one. Take care, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Blair.
You're welcome.